Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Juliette Talevi, and joining me to take your questions this evening are Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Alex Dace from Mtombo Wealth. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Rowan, Alex, good to see you both there this evening. Alex, if I may start with you, it wasn't a bad day for the JSE, and it was quite surprising to me, at least, to see Naspers and Prosus do okay, notwithstanding the wobble on Chinese markets this morning in response to the protests that are now I suppose being made in defiance of the terrible COVID lockdowns that the Chinese people have had to endure. And I wonder if I can, your sense, do you think it's going to derail markets going to the year end? Because there was some expectation that the reopening post-COVID in China was going to be extremely bullish for equity markets. Firstly, do you think that thesis was correct? Secondly, do you think that thesis is now off the cards?
Good evening. Yeah, I mean, certainly if you look since end of September, markets have had quite a bit of a strong so-called relief rally. Mostly pricing in, I can imagine, that there's going to be reopening of China and perhaps inflation is not going to be bad as expected, et cetera, et cetera. So as soon as any of those variables changes, obviously, sentiment will change again, and you'll see change in market prices. So, I was never really a believer that the Chinese market is going to reopen as quickly as people want.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, you do have an authoritarian state there that do things their own way. They're not going to allow the people to tell them what to do, or certainly what Westerners were expecting to do, and so forth. So, I think it's unfortunate what is happening there, but I think things can even come even tougher before it gets better there. But the fact of the matter is the Chinese economy does need some growth, and you're seeing all sorts of stimulus trying to be pushed in. We saw the relief packages they've given to the property sector now and so forth. So there are certainly worries there, but at the same time, it still wants to rule the country with an iron fist.
Mm.
And history will tell us that that's usually not at the benefit of the populace.
Yeah. I mean, Rowan, the question that's come through is, Chinese authorities normally react severely to any kind of civil protest or unrest, which I think, I don't know if they've yet done, but the signs of the protest were already scrubbed a few hours afterwards. What are the chances that they'll listen this time and relax their strict COVID restrictions, which in theory should boost their stock markets? Is that an unanswerable question?
Yeah. Well, you're trying to understand what are the reasons for these draconian lockdowns when the rest of the world has essentially moved on. I guess part of it is it is an authoritarian state, and they don't want to backtrack on a policy that they've had. But an interesting piece of analysis I saw from one of the local brokers is that China has very few hospital beds, only around 7 million for a population of 1.4 billion, and even less critical care beds. So if they relax the lockdowns and there's a significant increase in infection rates as a result, they will see a hospital-type crisis, which will also reflect badly on the Communist Party and the state. And that's one of the reasons they're perpetuating the lockdown. So I think it's going to be sort of a standoff between the population and the government. But they will probably manage it in terms of staged sort of relaxation in an attempt, I think, to manage the peak of the pandemic, which was part of the objectives of lockdown. So this could go on for a while yet, I guess, is the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the terrible human toll, and I mean, being locked in your house for 100 days on end, it must be unbearable. But do we place too much emphasis on China's reopening as far as the stock market is concerned?
Yeah, that's, I think, a fair point, because obviously if you look at the South African, the Aussie, it is quite reliant on China. We've obviously got the direct sort of exposure via Naspers and Prosus. Richemont is quite reliant on China, and then all the resource counters also quite reliant on marginal demand from China. So I think it is important for our market. I think there have been other factors driving our market recently where it's sort of been bullish. I think the positive sentiment towards Naspers and Prosus, independent of Tencent, has been quite supportive as well of markets given the buyback and sort of the change in capital allocation. So there's quite a bit at play. But China matters to the JSC, certainly.
Yeah, okay. On to some positive news, and that was City Lodge, which came out with a really nice trading update today. It was a voluntary trading update, and they talked about occupancy levels. And there's a couple of questions. The first was, City Lodge Hotel, which is one of mine and your regular guests' favorite stock picks, had a massive day today, having climbed 40 cents at the time of sending this. Could I get the panel's thoughts on the reasons for these movements and overall thoughts on CLH's prospects? The other question was whether or not that you would buy City Lodge at this point. Alex, what did you think of that trading update? And do you think this is the start of a positive move up?
Oh, so unlike China, I mean, South Africa has moved on from COVID. So obviously people are moving freely again, and, you know, tourists are coming back to South Africa. We expect very strong December numbers, for example, in the Western Cape. So you're starting to see occupancies recover and getting back to levels that were before COVID. And I think that's a clear positive. Now, these companies, and I'm referring to not only City Lodge, you know, Soho and Southern Sunrada and Soho Gaming, they've all really cut their cost base very, very lean. So now with revenues approaching quite pre-COVID levels, even though it's still behind in real terms, margins are going to be much higher, and you're going to start really seeing benefits coming through of that. So I think that sector, you've seen the share price recovery quite strong across the board. But with this type of update, you know, there's most likely even more, a lot more runway ahead of themselves. So it's looking positive. They've also probably underspent on CapEx in the last few years, but that will be, become a problem a bit later on. But for the time being, you see very strong cash earnings and as well as accounting earnings, and that's going to drive the share prices higher.
Yeah. I mean, there was a real moment clearly of doubt about City Lodge in October. You can see, you know, it had a decent start to the year, and then it kind of steadily dwindled south and then kind of hit its nadir, as you can see from that chart there. Rowan, R5.11, I mean, in the context of a one-year chart, you know, it looks like it's heading back towards its highs, but of course it's nowhere close to where it was kind of pre-COVID. Is this a company that you would back now?
I think it traditionally was a very well-run business, very lean, had a good market niche, and they sort of put their market position and they leveraged it well. Pricing, I think, is sort of we're seeing in reporting that one is above COVID highs, or pre-COVID highs, shall I say, 29 occupancy in I think October was good at 60%. So the sort of sequential improvement is good, and as Alex says, they generally better businesses, and they sort of just have taken the opportunity to be leaner and more contribution. And I think with probably a good festive season coming up, I think a lot of people are going to get a break and travel, that occupancies could be good, and the profit will come through. So I think it can continue to grow, and there's de-gearing as well as the profits flow through to the balance sheet. And you could see, these businesses coming back quite strongly even and from these things.
Yeah. Rowan, sorry, there's like a little bit of a breakup on the connection with you. So, it's probably load shedding. I'm sure that'll get sorted out. But I mean, if you had to take a pick between, you know, Alex, you mentioned you've got a few options. You've got Sun International, you've got Southern Sun, you've got Soho Gaming, you've got City Lodge. Are there any, and especially based on the basis of the trading update today, that you would favour over the other?
Yeah, so our preference has been for Southern Sun as well as Sun International. City Lodge, mostly the reason for that is, I mean, and Rowan did allude to it, historically there used to be very good management in there, but, you know, over the last decade or so there have been a lot of mess steps there, and of course there are big rights issues, the BE deal, etc., that all went south. So, yes, there are new management in there, and there's a new era, I guess, but it's not the same quality as when it was before. I think the likes of Southern Sun have got very experienced operators there. Businesses between lean and mean, I think they're still very well positioned. And I think Southern National also impressed me with their recovery thus far. They've also got their balance sheet under control.
Yeah.
Also seeing likes of Sun City, you know, doing relatively well, even though that asset is pretty much a legacy asset that doesn't add any value. You're starting to see some benefits coming out of that. And in general, they've also got the casino part with the hotels. It gives you a bit of a double whammy there, and I think they've been quite well. And I think those stocks, even though they've rallied quite hard from their lows, and they're probably pretty much back to pre-COVID levels, I still think they're relatively well positioned because the balance sheets are much stronger. And I think the fear of that they might need rights issues or that they're going to have problems going forward has been abated.
Yes. Rowan, just maybe last question here. You know, Tsokhosun split itself into gaming and hotel assets, where Sun International is still the whole package. Do you think that was a savvy... I mean, would you go for gaming over hotels? Is there a particular rationale for you to have one of the other, or would you rather buy Sun International where you're kind of covered on both bases?
Yes, I think it is worth considering. The gamers probably be a little bit more strictly considered.
Rowan, we seem to have sorted out our connection to you, and we were talking about City Lodge and generally the hotel and gaming sector on the JSE, and I asked about the rationale in Tsoko splitting itself apart. So, you know, you can either buy the pure gaming assets or you can buy the hotel business, where Sun International, of course, is still a consolidated operation. For you, which would you choose? And, I mean, do you think that was a wise step to separate into the two?
Yeah, I think what you've got is a different risk profile of the two businesses. Also, the hotel business lends itself, obviously, there's the property element to it, and then the operating, the hotel operation. So they'd also split that out separately previously. So I think you've got slightly different costs of capital and different target markets in terms of the gambling side would be more focused on the consumer, whereas the hotel side, you've got the leisure business and the more business side to the occupancy. So I think you'll have a more stable business there. So they probably felt they could attract the appropriate investor and probably get the cost of capital.
Oh dear. At a crucial moment. I mean, Alex, okay, so good rationale to splitting those two. I suppose we can't forestall what Rowan was about to say there, but you said that Sun International would be your preferred entry. Is it because you kind of smooth out both sides of the various markets that the two companies are targeting?
I mean, I'd be like both Southern Sun Hotels and Sun International over City Lodge, for example. But look, it also depends on, I mean, I think Rowan really alluded to that. I mean, the mix makes it more diversified as a result, lower cost of capital, etc. But there's also opportunities to buy. It depends on fundamentals and price you pay. So there will be times that you're going to favor the hotels over having any form of gaming exposure, and there will be times that you think the gaming exposure will be more beneficial. Complement to the... So it's not always a foregone conclusion to buy one over the other. You know, you do take into consideration what your views are and where you are in the cycle.
Okay. Where do you think we are in the cycle?
Well, I mean, obviously, we've got quite a weak global environment at the moment, and it's also on a lot of pressure, as you know. So consumer spending is coming under pressure. So you would think that the gaming side of things will probably feel a little bit of a pinch. So I think PO hotels, where it's more tied to leisure or business for foreigners, is probably a safer bet at this particular moment. But we've also just coming from COVID, and people's mindsets might have changed, and they might still be spending more at the slots and so forth.
Yeah.
But in general, you would imagine that the consumer would be more under pressure.
Okay. Ron, I'll go back to you, and maybe it's the question that's messing up the internet connection. I'm going to move on. There's a question on Barloworld and Zeda, and is Barloworld good for a medium-term buy, and will Zeda on its own be a worthwhile to hold in a portfolio? Of course, a split being announced, this time last week, and then a little bit more information on it today.
Yeah, so I think what you can see is the market's also thinking quite hard about this particular question, because it's imminent, the split, and with the pre-listing statement for Zeda came out today. So you've got a lot more detail on the business. So the business, the car rental and leasing business, is considered to be quite cyclical. It requires quite a lot of gearing because it's got a significant asset base in the form of the vehicle fleet. And the earnings have recovered very well. Just continuing this COVID recovery theme, the car rental business, the demand has been good. You've seen reduction in supply as certain businesses, car rental businesses, actually stopped operating. So there's a better demand-supply balance. So it actually, business is doing quite well. The concern is, are they at the peak of the cycle, very good margins, and can they continue the profitability? So the rating is probably not going to be that high for Zeta, and you see Motus and CMH as are probably your two best comparables for that business. So sub 10 PE there. Mm. And then the Barloworld business has been doing very well. Part of the issue is they have exposure to Russia, and they've now sort of recognized that, sort of as a potentially discontinued operation, but the cash flows are probably going to drop significantly out of that business, and it was a very profitable part of their business, and they alluded to a slowdown in demand and some cost pressures. So it's quite a tricky balance to look at it. But on a sum of the parts now, before the unbundling, it looks reasonable because you are also going to get a special dividend out of Barloworld. But I think you're certainly going to see a lot of action and quite a lot of share price volatility on the day of the unbundling, as this price discovery of the two parts, the two consequent parts.
I mean, I suppose, Alex, one of the factors that could also give in potential investors, or if you're a Barloworld shareholder, pause, is that if Barloworld doesn't want the business, then why should I want the business? You know, they tried to sell it, they couldn't get a buyer, so they're unbundling it. If you're a Barloworld shareholder, do you just sort of sit tight and see, as Rowan says, what happens to the price on the day of Zeta's listing? Or do you actually maybe, if you don't believe in that business and you think that the business is at a cyclical peak, you'd rather sell your Barloworld shares now and then just see what happens or see what transpires in the first couple of weeks of trading?
Yeah, I mean, you can also, of course, keep your Barloworld and sell the Zeta components if you don't like that part of the business.
Sure.
So there are multiple options available. I mean, Barloworld share price did derate substantially due to the Russia issue, and has recovered somewhat since then. I mean, they have focused a lot on return metrics as well as returning back cash back to shareholders. So there will always be a type of investor that will favor that. I think the business is not in a bad situation. Obviously, Mongolia also has got some problems in the moment because of China lockdowns, etc. So there is it's a lot of moving parts in Barloworld, which is making it quite difficult to get a sense of where the valuation needs to be. Yeah. So I think it's you do get some investors that perhaps love it at these levels and others simply hate it. And if you look at some of the shorted stocks in SA, you tend to find Barloworld there. So there's not a lot of investors that tend to love it. But on the LZ, if you look at it seems to be quite mature. If you look at the market shares we've really got, if you look at the revenue numbers over the last few years, doesn't look like there's a hell of a lot of potential growth. Investors also don't know the management team that's involved there, so that's going to take a couple of years for them to get a sense of, you know, who are they, what exactly are they planning to do, you know. And also, if you look at the ratings, I mean, something like a CMH, which has got no debt, you know, it's got paying high dividends, is at a very low rating. Yeah. This is a business that's, you know, got high debt levels, perhaps going to even lose market share from this base. And you would ask yourself, does it really deserve a premium rating? Yes or no? So there are some factors to consider here, certainly. And, you know, investors will be going through this listing statement in detail. And it'll be interesting to see where it does stabilize when it comes to the market.
Yeah. I mean, the CMH comparison is a very sound one, because CMH is it's been such a well-run company, and it's so unsung. It doesn't, and for years, you know, you do well out of it, you get good dividends, but really, the market pretty much ignores it. Just maybe one last comment there. Do you think there's going to be any consolidation? So then you'll have CMH, you'll have Motus, and you'll have Zeta. Do you think anyone would be a buyer of any of the three? Alex, you think no?
The fact that it's coming to the market tells you there's no buyer.
Yeah, okay.
If there's a buyer, it might be CMH. Someone could buy out CMH in the future because they're much smaller, and you've got management team that's close to retirement. They've got a big chunk in shares. But I can't see, and obviously Motus is focusing offshore, etc. So I don't think you're going to see corporate action with Zeta specifically anytime soon.
Yeah. Rowan, I mean, sorry, that probably was a very stupid question, because if Barloworld didn't get a buyer, then why should there be a buyer? But, you know, you separate out the business, maybe it's it makes it a little bit more transparent. But would you share Alex's view there?
Yeah, I think so. It's quite a unique business. It's a very capital intensive, big balance sheets. I mean, we saw where demand dropped due to an external shock, COVID. Some businesses struggled. They went into liquidation. So I think it's considered risky, and that's why it requires its own cost of capital, which it seems to be quite high given the low ratings. And so they will remain standalone businesses. I think over time, they actually, if you add the yields, it can be a reasonable investment. I think it just has to attract the right kind of investor that's happy with a low rating, bit of cyclicality, but a dividend that compensates you accordingly.
Yeah, okay. Then there's a question on SPA. The media reports on SPA are quite concerning, but then again, are they? It seems to be more of disgruntled franchise holders. So I suppose we've been all over this. Business Day today had an interesting story. Rowan, staying with you, does it give you pause? Would you be a bit quite nervous about buying SPA shares at this point?
Yeah, I think what's happening is the grocery retail space is getting more dynamic, so the competitive intensity is increasing. ShopRite have really raised the bar, both with their different formats and then obviously the convenience in terms of 60-60. So there are technological trends that are taking place, and these are sort of changing behaviors. And SPA, for a variety of reasons, just partly because of the inflexibility of their business model, working with those franchisees in a wholesale distribution type structure, they haven't been able to move quick enough. And so I think there is real concern that they're not doing enough and are starting to lose market share. So Pick and Pay's actually up its game as a result of ShopRite upping its game. And I just think they're getting left behind. And I would think that the franchisees are possibly also getting concerned as a result. So they're quite a tight spot. Poland's also been a big challenge, much harder to turn around than they anticipated. And the SAP implementation on top of that is putting quite a lot of strain on the balance sheet. So it's a little bit of they're in a tough place at the moment.
Yeah. Alex, I mean, disgruntled shareholders, franchisees or not. I mean, if the business model is not going to sally into the next 10 years, then presumably this is not one that you'd want to touch.
I agree with Rowan. I mean, they've scored off quite a few own goals as well. I mean, these offshore deals, it's also really meant that they've taken the eye off South Africa, which is still the crown jewel today. And that's really, it just allowed its competitors to, to innovate more than them. I would have preferred if they focused more on SA, work on those inefficiencies and buy back shares, quite frankly, and keep paying a good dividend. I think that would have been a good, solid SA retail investment case. But with them going into Poland and Ireland, and Switzerland, it's just destroyed returns, it's geared up the balance sheet, it's taken management attention off the ball. And I think this is a very, very tough investment case to sell now. Yes, the valuation is looking cheap, but in my view, I think it's cheap for a reason.
Okay. Right, well, getting to your stock picks this evening, Alex, staying with you, what takes your fancy?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's still, in our view, quite a lot of opportunities in the mid and small cap space in South Africa. So, one that reported today is Invicta. We still think Invicta is quite attractive from a valuation perspective. If they can make in the region around 5 Rand earnings for the full year basis, that puts the business still at least in a P of 6. They can generate ROEs, in our view, relatively close to cost of capital, which means that, at some stage they should be trading close to the book value. And we saw the book value numbers today, $41. So that's still quite a big discount. I think it's about 0.6 discount to NAV. At the same time, I mean, they've cleaned up the balance sheet. They have refocused the business. And we think they're actually quite reasonably well positioned for growth if you take a medium to longer term view. Obviously, they've invested quite a lot in inventory now at the moment. So at some stage you should see some working capital release. And that will assist likes of share buybacks and so forth, which we think will further support the share price. So we really like what Stephen Joffe has done there, and we still think it's a good entry point at these levels.
Okay, yeah, well below 41 Rand at 28 Rand. Rowan, how about you?
Yeah, so we're going with Fashini Group. It has done quite poorly since its results. I think what you've seen is some concern about the health of the consumer and just their cash flows. I think you've seen across a number of retailers have had to increase their stocks just in because of the supply chain disruption. So Christmas trading is going to be very important, but I think it's got too cheap relative to its medium-term prospects. They're not only exposed to the South African consumer, significant operations in Australia that continue to deliver and do incredibly well, and the UK, I think they've right-sized their business and in a good market niche there. And they continue to innovate in their supply chain and with apps, and they are moving into an online retail space. Very strong management team. They do have the credit lever that they can pull. They haven't actually lost market share compared to Mr. Price, who have lost market share. So it's cum dividend, which we'll get on early January. Okay. So I think if you're taking that all together, sort of kind of close to sub 10 PE, it does look quite attractive here. And we think a good entry point for the medium term.
Okay. Great. Jane, thank you very much for joining us. Sorry about some of the technical challenges this evening. Nice to chat to you both. Rowan Williams is from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Alex Dace is from Tumble Wealth. And I'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night. Have a good evening.